Right, so this was recorded on the 29th of April 2009. A conversation with Albert Constable, and Albert, I hope you don't mind if this material becomes part of a village archive.
No.
And the recording might be used for research and exhibition purposes in the village.
That's fine, yeah, that's fine.
Thank you. So, Albert, I won't be impolite and ask you how old you are, but I know you've... you're a man who's lived many decades in this area, in these villages, and one of the things I'd like to ask you is to cast your mind back to when you were a young lad leaving school. What sort of work opportunities were open to a lad of your generation?
When I left school at 15, you left when your birthday on when you were 15, you left on that day.
Yeah,
like I left at Christmas. And if your holiday was coming up, then you automatically left.
Yeah.
The work was plentiful then. You could get a job. I got a job straight away after the holiday break in Christmas. And
what was that job?
I worked at Brownie's Garage at Cumberton, John Brown.
Was that the garage on the High Street?
That's
was
right.
Still there till...
Yeah, it was on the High Street. And I worked there until August.
What were you doing?
As a mechanic.
Yeah.
I was learning the trade, but it didn't work out for me. I didn't like the job. I was set inside all the time.
Right.
So
mostly cars, or was it?
Yeah, just
good to be a car.
Mostly cars. Major Matt Farland Greig was one of the customers that used to come there. That lived in the village down Toft Manor.
Mm-hmm.
He used to have three cars: Austin 16, and Austin 8, and Austin 10.
Right.
And,
yeah.
He used to bring his cars there. The old man, John Brown's father, used to do bikes, and John Brown had the car side of it, the garage side of it. And I worked there until the summer.
Yeah.
And then I got fed up with that. I was all in one place, and I didn't really set to it. So I went to work with my brothers. And
what years approximately was this? We're talking about 1950s, are we? Or?
Yeah. Well, I was 15. I was born in 1934,
right,
so that
yeah.
would be 15 would be 1949.
Yeah, just 14, coming up to the 1950s.
Just coming up to
the 50s,
yeah. That's right, yeah, 1950. And what was plentiful, the money was poor. I was getting, when I started at Brownies, I was working from up past 7 until 6. 5 days a week, and up past 7 until 1 o'clock on a Saturday for 27
goodness.
Shillings.
Yeah.
And
people wouldn't want to do that now, would they?
No, they wouldn't.
You can
no.
imagine.
Well, times have changed, but then I went to work for Claude Tibbett, Cliff Tibbett's father.
Yeah.
With my two brothers, and my money went to £2.50 a week.
And what were you doing there with them?
Doing all the general work. I mean, I started at harvest time, of course, being August bank holiday Monday on the first Monday of the month,
mm-hmm.
of them days.
Yes, yeah,
and
right.
We used to, they were combining. Well, yeah, it was the first year that Cliff Tibbett had a combine. He
right.
had a Massey Ferguson, Massey Harris, 8 foot cut, and the old combine.
So, what would they have done before that?
Well, we used to. Combine, binder. Mm. They had
binder.
The old binder.
Yes.
Used to throw the sheaves out. Then
yeah.
we had to go round and shock them, because he used to do most of it with that anyway.
Yeah.
Still, because of his cattle.
Uh-huh.
Then you'd leave them, shock them up in the fields. A chap named Perkis used to come for help us. In them. He used to be the village policeman.
Oh.
He
yeah,
lived
yeah.
where one of the Wharton's, doesn't he? Right on the corner of Hardwick
yes,
Road?
Yes, yeah.
Well, he lived in that there then. It's where
right.
he lived.
It's a long time since we've had a Bobby in the
village.
Yeah,
it is, yeah.
yeah. Mm.
I think, I can't remember any other policeman in the village.
Right.
He wasn't the police, he'd retired when I was,
he'd
retired. But I can't remember anybody else staying in the village.
Yeah. So the harvest was obviously a big event then. And
oh, yes, it was.
How many men typically would have been working?
Well, there'd be four or five of you then.
Yeah.
I mean, there was three, me, two brothers,
mm.
and there was Ernie Jacklin, and then you'd get the odd extras,
people
coming to help
yeah.
do the harvest. You'd also have to, in the springtime, you'd be cleaning. When the cattle went out the yards, you'd have to all by horse, because we had three or four horses then. Everything was done by horse and cart.
Yes, yeah.
All the harvest was carted in by horse and cart.
Right, yeah.
Stacked into the yard. And then in the winter, you had the threshing tackle come in and thresh it out. You take the corn to the granary and stack
when,
the
when
straw.
Was that done, the threshing?
That was done after Christmas. That was done about February, March time.
Right, yeah. And was that heavy work, hard work?
Well, it was. I mean, the corn, when you was threshing out wheat, they were 18 stone sacks.
Yeah,
of wheat.
That's heavy, isn't it?
And you had 16 stone of barley and 14 stone of oats, because they were the lightest, and 20 stone in beans. So, I mean, when you had to wind them up on a winder, you had all by hand, on your back, onto a cart, and cart it up to the granary. Yeah.
That is actually, that's a big weight, isn't it? 20 stone, yeah. That's the size of a very large man.
That was heavy. I mean, I wasn't old enough not to carry them at that time.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, I wasn't strong enough to carry them at that time, not at 15. But as I got older, the time I left, I could carry them.
Yeah. And those were quite long shifts during the harvest time.
Well, it used to start in the morning. Yeah. It used to come at 7 o'clock in the morning. Mm. Harvest time was...
Yeah.
You'd start at 7 and you'd probably work till dark.
Yeah. Yeah.
Carry on till dark.
So what do you think now when you look at these huge combines coming up Mill Lane and tractors as high as the houses?
Well, it's a different era, isn't it? I mean, it's so mechanised now. The hard work's gone out of it now. I mean, where we used to take till probably September to get all the stuff in.
Yeah.
I mean, weeks, because you see, they used to start cutting it before it was really ripe.
It used
to be just underripe when they used to cut the wheat. It wasn't real ripe like it is now.
Right.
And they'd stand in the shocks until it ripe, and then you'd bring it to the stacks. I mean, it was a long process. Someone said the other day that they do 100 acres a day nearly.
Yeah, I'm sure they do, and they work. I mean, they work till darkness, don't they?
Where if we cut down... I can remember when I first started on the combine, if you'd done 5 or 6 acres...
You were doing well.
You were doing well. Mm-hmm. It was the same with drilling.
Yeah.
It's the same, the old drills.
Yeah.
Those small 8-foot drills.
What about hedges? There were more hedges around in those days.
Oh,
so
yeah.
There must have been a lot of hedging work going on.
Oh, yes. The hedges were everywhere. I mean, you had hedges. And that was a wintertime job.
Right. So
In the wintertime, you'd be out every morning at 7 o'clock. You'd go down the field and two or three of you, you'd trim the edges up.
Mm.
Lunchtime, 10 o'clock, you'd have your lunch. You'd make a stack of grass. You'd cut the ditches out at the same time. You'd make a big heap of grass and bushes. Then sit in there. And then you'd get all the old wood out of the hedgerows and you'd make a nice fire and have a toast. because you never had sandwiches in them days. It was just a loaf of bread with a lump of butter cut in the middle of it and then a lump of cheese block and a big lump of bread. It used to be about 4 to 5 inches thick. And that was it.
So that's obviously the origin of the ploughman's lunch, isn't it?
That's
what
right,
they call
yes,
that now,
that's
the
right.
cheese and the bread and
you also
very basic.
Every so often you'd have to dig the ditch out. Take a spit out the bottom of a ditch, spit it
by
out.
By hand?
Oh, yes, all by hand. Oh, yes. And then you'd put it, bank it on the bank. And that's how they kept all the ditches clean and all the drains, they run lovely. I mean, we used to drink the water out the drains.
Really?
Oh, yes, you could drink that.
So the task was to keep the ditches clear.
Yeah.
What about cutting the actual hedges?
Used to trim them. And they
right.
used to be the white thorn. And on particular one, well, the one I used to like doing was the one between Chivers Farm up Hardwick Road and down to Bennell Farm.
Yeah.
And we used to trim it right up as far as we could reach, and it used to bell out at the top.
Oh.
And it used to be one mass of white flower in
that
the summer.
That must have been very nice.
It used to look lovely.
Yeah. Is that still there, that hedge, or is that
gone
now? Is
that's
it?
All gone, yeah.
I mean, they are bringing hedges back now, aren't they? Do you think
that's a good idea?
I mean,
they are doing wonderful job now, really, bringing all the edges back, because it is helping the environment as well, you know.
So in your day, these decades ago, the hedges were more prominent. Were the fields actually the size they are now, or were they divided more into smaller plots?
around some are still parts? The same, but they did take edges out and fill ditches in.
Yeah.
They'd done that a lot. Intensive farming came in about the 70s.
Yeah.
And everybody was cutting edges down and filling ditches in.
Yeah.
It happened all round here, all round Hardwickwood Farm, up to Hardwickwood.
Yeah.
I mean, I helped to do some of them.
Yeah.
But
it was a time when there was a great need for more production,
farm,
wasn't there, and
right.
so on. Yeah.
That's right. There was no waste at all, and
no.
there were so many different crops then. I mean, a lot of people, they used to grow, I can remember them growing what they called tares. They used to be samphire, white clover, red clover, and they used to undersow that in the barley.
Right.
And then they cut the barley, and then the next crop was the clover. And beans, peas, oats, barley, wheat. Those. But now you see there's
it's
no...
It's monoculture now, isn't it? It's either wheat or rape or barley.
That's right.
Not even much barley now, is there?
Really? I don't see anybody grow barley in the area here at the moment.
Yeah.
You go down Norfolk... you do see more variety of crops there because I think there's more old places where they use a lot more thatch and that, and they've got cattle and down there. But around here now it's...
So were you employed, or you, not just you yourself, but say typical young men, were you employed seasonally, or were you paid full time? Were you employed full time by the farmers? You were on their books and...
I was on full time, 90% of the people, well, I say nearly all of them, really, in them days, they started on the farm. I mean, there was hundreds like me.
Yes,
and,
You
worked full-time for the farmer.
Yeah.
And you used to get changed around. I mean, when a farmer, say, like Ken Tibbet had the threshing tackle coming, you'd probably be lent out to Ken for the while the threshing tackle there to help him out with his threshing.
Right, so you went from farm to farm.
I went from to Ken's, and I'd also been to George Hagger at Kingston.
Yes,
Tibbets, you know, they're all friends, and they used to help each other out. But you was working full time.
So there was a pool of men who.
Yeah.
And what about women? Were women employed on the farms?
There weren't. Not when I started, there wasn't. No, there
were.
What
about fruit picking? They did a bit of that.
Oh, there was plenty of fruit pickers about. Oh, yes, chivers for the main fruiters around here, Hardwick.
Yeah.
All the women used to go fruit picking. There was a lot of potato picking as well.
Oh, really?
Yes, and there's a lot of women went potato picking.
Around this part? Around these areas?
Oh, yes, all around here. I mean, Bourne, there's a lot. around Bourne and.
So they were
Caxton and all around that area. They weren't quite so much in Toft.
Yeah.
But they used to be. They used to used to grow potatoes
really?
In Toft.
Yeah.
Miss Claude Tibbet used to grow potatoes. But
and livestock, what, there was sheep and what?
Well,
this
beef cattle, yes. A lot of beef cattle, a lot of milkers. Nearly every farm had milkers.
Yeah.
I mean, my brother was head stockman for Clifford.
Mm-hmm.
He had done milking there. He milked all the cows for years. I mean, the barn's still there.
Which barn is that?
That's the barn. You know the one that got converted?
Yes,
what's he do? He does...
the sculptor.
Sculptor.
Yes.
Well, that long one that runs alongside the road, that used to be the milking...
Oh, that
parlor.
Was the milking parlour.
There was, yeah.
Yes.
And used to stand the churns on a stand outside Nestor Road, and then
for
a lorry come,
and
then Paul would come up and used to come and collect it on his lorry, also, pigs. Where the new houses are on the corner of Varley Road, just before you, that used to be where Claude Tibbet used to keep all his pigs. There was all pig sheds around there, yeah.
So essentially what you're saying is there was a great diversity in those days.
Oh, there was.
Yeah.
Very big diversity in everything. It's just one thing. Really.
Yeah. But if a young man didn't go into farming in your day, as you say, one opportunity was, say, car mechanic in a local garage. Were there any other opportunities actually in the villages themselves?
Well, no, not really, because it was just all... There used to be the blacksmith, of course, blacksmiths in the villages, but, I mean, they didn't need anybody. No. They were just the one blacksmith. Mm. I mean, and the odd shops.
So if you didn't go in for farming, you had to go into town.
Well, you had to go somewhere. Yeah,
do a trade
mean,
or
that's right. I mean, there was a builder, a small builder at Bourne, John Gage. I mean, he had his own building business. Yeah. They go back a long way.
Yeah.
There was the odd builders about, but apart from that, there wasn't very
much
much around the camp, not the countryside, really. It was all farming.
Yeah. So when you look at it now, do you think Toft is a better place now, or not such...
Well...
Not such a good place.
Well, I don't... The village is still as nice
it's
as...
It's a simplistic still, it's, question,
it's,
isn't it?
It's a nice... It's still a nice village,
nice
but...
Nice community.
But you don't know all the people. I mean, when I was a lad, and same as the other lads, what were we like? Colin Ward, Pat, and poor boy, he's gone now, but... And Corin and Keith.
Yeah.
We knew everybody in the village because there was only 400 or 500 people in the village then.
Yeah, and you all knew one another.
We all knew everybody in the village.
Yeah.
Old Owen Brazier down at Toft, he used to make the spits and the hurdles for sheep and all that,
Yeah, so there were all these allied trades
that
must have supported the agriculture.
Yeah. And there was the pits behind the shop. Where they got the industry now, where they got the
trading estate, yeah.
Well, it used to be sawmill pits there. Well, they used to saw by hand. Mm. One used to be in a pit and one at top, and they used to have these big cross-cut saws.
Yes. That must have been hard work.
That was hard.
I bet there was.
Whether they're still there now or not, I don't know. But.
Was there any forestry? I mean, did anybody look after Hardwick Wood and those the woodlands?
Well, that belonged to a chap named Harrell.
It was privately owned, was it?
That never really had anybody looking after it.
Did they have gamekeepers up there? Or
no,
there was no game.
Not to my knowledge. I can never remember anybody being a proper gamekeeper in it. But
were there pheasant in there?
There's everything in there: pheasants and woodcock.
Yeah,
all the birds that jays and magpies, all the birds, squirrels.
But it wasn't actually kind of farmed for game or anything.
It was just a woods and. Owen Brazier used to buy half an acre of the wood. Well, he didn't used to buy. He used to buy half acre for the nut wood for making spits and for thatching.
So that's where he got his.
That's where he got
from.
Yeah, because my father worked for him at the end of his days, and he used to go and take the horse up there and cut it out for him. Yeah, make the spits. Yeah.
Gosh. So a lot of the. Work in the village was in a way self-contained and serving one another and supporting the general agriculture.
Oh yeah, yes it was. Most of it was like that. I mean, people used to. All right, we used to have the roadmen in the village. I mean, we used to have two roadmen in the village regularly, just to do their, just more or less in the village all the time,
maintaining the.
Bert Sparks and Les Sparks were the two chaps that. Come to mind as doing the roads nearly all the while. Yeah.
Right. So who did they work for? They worked for
the council.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
But that was their territory.
Was a
patch,
yeah.
Yeah.
Every
yeah.
village had the same.
Had the roadmen. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We tend to forget that, don't we? Yeah. That kind of.
That's right. You don't
job that kept the village going.
And they used to keep clean. All the drains were cleaned out regular and everything. They used to clean all the drains as well with a big. With a stick with a ladle on the bottom. You just take all the drains up and clean them all out, yeah.
Sounds like a very savoury job.
No.
But what about small trades like electricians and plumbers and so on? Were there men in the village who you could turn to if you had a burst pipe or you... Well, you didn't have electricity, of course, but...
We never had no electricity and yet no water. We used to pump it. Village pump.
What do you call them? Not cesspits, what do you call them?
Wells?
No, I mean for the toilets and so on, the waste.
Oh, we used to have a bucket.
Septic tanks?
No, we used to have a bucket then. Well, the toilet used to be a bucket and you used to have to put disinfectant in your bucket. Your toilet used to be outside there.
Right.
Used to have a big bucket and then you used to have to... dig a hole in the garden.
Yes, okay.
And that's where it all used to go.
So there wouldn't have been a huge call for plumbers or electricians or central heating
engineers
What did you burn on your fires?
Wooden coal.
Wooden coal.
Wooden coal.
Yeah, and the coal came in... Was the coal yard there then or what?
No, what's the name of Cummerton? Oh, I can't think of their names now. I can't think of his name. It's gone.
So there was a coal merchant there.
Coal merchant came round, yes.
And did the coal come in on the sidings of the railway? Or
yeah, it was just a bit at Toft.
There was a sidings here.
Used to siding there at Toft, Toft siding, and they used to get the cart the coal from there, and then he used to... Phil Rogers was the coalman.
Okay, Phil Rogers, right. And that was in Cumberton.
It was in Cumberton. Yeah. First, right opposite the college. The first house on the left-hand side as you go into Cumberton.
Yes,
near the college.
Yes,
that used to be Phil Rogers' place, your coal yard.
And wood, did you have to buy wood or did you just gather?
Most of it was always, there was so much wood then. So much wood around, nobody ever bought any.
Yeah.
It would just come around, used to... The farmer, if I had a tree fall down, they'd give you it then.
They'd give it to you, yeah.
Yeah.
And apart from that, I suppose there was the shop, which we know quite a lot about. And of course, there were a couple of pubs, weren't there?
The Black Bull. Mm-hmm. That's where I had my first beer in there at 18. Yes, I did. It was Fordham's Ale then.
Yeah, Fordham's.
Wow, Fordham's Ale, that's going
doesn't
back.
Doesn't exist, does it?
No. There's also the post office, Mrs. Alden, down the bottom, the thatch cottage, that was a post office.
Yeah.
Then we had the blacksmith, and then there was Pooley, Mr. Pooley.
Where's Mr.
Pooley? He had the little, you know the little cottage behind the telephone kiosk?
Yes.
Across the little lawn there, and there's a little cottage at the back there. Well, that Mr. Pooley had a little shop there, sold everything and everything in there.
Good Lord.
And that's where we had the village doctor's surgery.
Oh, really?
And a Dr. Winter, who was a Frenchman, used to come up there and he used to do his Toft surgery in there.
Well.
Yeah.
So it was quite a bit of activity there.
Oh, yeah. There was. And then, of course, we had the Red Lion. That was...
Yes.
That was...
That persisted into my time. I've been in the village for 22 years and... certainly the pub was still thriving when we arrived here.
It's a shame we haven't got a village pub now, really.
I
call a village pub.
Yes, a proper pub.
But there isn't many left now, is there not?
No, that's true. And I think that's really where I'd like to end this conversation, that village life has changed greatly. And someone like yourself is in a unique position to have seen all these changes. And I think that's why it's... really very nice of you to agree to record your memories and experiences, because we will never see that life again.
No, that's finished. Yeah. No, we'll never go back to those days.
No.
They were very... I always enjoyed my childhood and my young days and with all the young lads in the village.
Yes.
We never had no money, but we didn't need any.
A work and play were
closely allied
with the same people, weren't they?
Yeah. Yes, they were very good.
Well, thank you so much, Albert. And, you know,
I hope
future generations of Toft will be able to listen to this and appreciate how much history and continuity there's been in this village, going back, obviously, hundreds of years. And, you know, thank you so much indeed.
We'll stop
the recording there. And this was recorded by Mike McCarthy in the village of Toft, at the end of April in 2009, with Albert Constable, native of this village.